南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hello, thank you for being here. I respect your effort and your practice. And this channel is all about providing you a resource for research. So use that search in the on the homepage of this channel. Not the YouTube church search, but the homepage search. Look up by keywords like karma or daimoku or any other term that you've come across in your study that you want to maybe do a little deeper dive into. And I guarantee you, you'll find a video somewhere on this channel, probably several. Also, don't forget threefoldlotus.com. There's a lot of free information for download there. It's a simple HTTP site. No JavaScript or anything like that to collect your info. The bookstore, the mandala store, the podcasts, available wherever you get your podcast, the Buddhahood podcast. So it's all about resource and study, right? To support your practice, my practice, our practice. And in that vein, I am going down another road of translators' efforts and collections of Nichiren's writings, which elucidate our practice of the Lotus Sutra. And we are in the midst of discussing the essence of the Lotus Sutra written by Nichiren. Nichiren is now going to speak on the different, you know, we often talk about the Lotus Sutra as separated into two halves or three parts, depending on your point of view. And Nichiren is going to dissect it yet again in a different way. The first eight chapters versus the six chapters following the first eight, which constitute the theoretical teachings of the Lotus Sutra, the first half, if you will, and so on. So let's just get into it and you'll understand. The question that he's posing for himself is, for whom was the Lotus Sutra expounded? We all have our own answer that comes to mind real quickly, but in the scope of scholarship and all the sutras, in other words, what distinguishes the Lotus Sutra and to which audience, which mindset, which capacity grouped sentient beings was the Lotus Sutra for? And this is in keeping with the earlier sutras being for people of earlier capacities, taught to their abilities, whereas the Lotus Sutra is taught for all our abilities, the abilities equal to Shakyamuni's, the capacity to understand and enlighten, realize our own Buddha in our own mind, right? Buddha-ness. But dissecting it in the modes of scholarship and the way these are all written, he proceeds. There are two views about the eight chapters starting from chapter 2 of the Lotus Sutra, expedient means, to chapter 9, the assurances of future Buddhahood. So if we read these chapters in the order of the chapters from the beginning, We can see that the sutra was preached, first of all, for bodhisattvas. It was directed to that capacity, yeah? Secondly, for the men of the two vehicles, which until the Lotus Sutra were basically told they didn't have the ability to be enlightened for Buddhahood, such as Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha. And thirdly, for ordinary people, people throughout the world, people who weren't isolated monks in a monastery, for instance, just the general public. However, when we read the chapters from the 14th chapter on peaceful practices at the end of the theoretical section, followed by the 13th on the encouragement for keeping this sutra, the 12th on Devadatta, the 11th on the beholding the stupa of treasures, the treasure tower, and the 10th on the teacher of the Dharma, so he's coming back the other way, we can see that these eight chapters were expounded for encouraging people after the Buddha's extinction. So we get a deeper understanding of what the earlier chapters were about. They seem like they're specifically for these capacities. And yet, as we continue to read, or we read from the center back, we understand that all these teachings are for the people of the latter age, or people after Shakyamuni's passing, not for the semblance and the Dharma age all the way to, right? We can see these blah, 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 blah. People during the lifetime of the Buddha are secondary. Not because they're secondary in importance, but in relation to the teaching of the Lotus Sutra, the Lotus Sutra is more specific to a certain capacity. People whose practice is more self-oriented, because Shakyamuni, Siddhartha Gautama, the teacher of Buddha, of Buddha-ness, no longer around. So they don't have somebody holding them by the hand going this way, this way. They now have to be self-directed. So there's a key difference there. Of those after the Buddha's extinction, people 1,000 years of the age of the true Dharma and 1,000 years of the age of the semblance Dharma are secondary. So they too, even though they are following the death of or the passing of Shakyamuni, they too are not the primary focus of the Lotus Sutra's teaching. He continues, the sutra was expounded mainly for the people in the latter age of degeneration. Of those in the latter age of degeneration, I, Nichiren, am the very person for whom it was expounded. Now that sounds like a very arrogant statement, doesn't it? But he's, again, we're dealing with translations here. Nichiren's meaning in this is Nichiren's time, this time period. I being myself and those of my generation, my time. This is who this was taught for. Now he's going to get even more specific than that. Question, what is the proof for that? Answer, the proof is in chapter 10, the teacher of the Dharma, saying, quote, many people hate it, the Lotus Sutra, with jealousy and even in my lifetime. This is Shakyamuni speaking, right? And they hate it with jealousy, which is the big tip-off, right? Because this teaching is the most advanced, the most really kind of what we would say self-rewarding, because it talks about self-realization. And until the Lotus Sutra, everybody selfishly thought, well, Shakyamuni is guiding us to Buddhahood, to realization. And now he's teaching that people can do that for themselves? What the hell? No. We're all led to... No. It's always been about self-teaching. But early students didn't get that. They still were attached to the person Shakyamuni instead of getting what he was getting at. This is a condition of mind that you all have. It's not me who's Buddha. Buddha is something I've achieved that's achievable to any sentient being. You do this for yourself. But still wouldn't, no. Until the Lotus Sutra, he makes it obvious. This is for people when I'm gone, me Shakyamuni, who will be able to instantiate this Buddha in mind themselves. Well, who are you? Right? This, the jealousy, right? So it pissed a lot of people off. It's just their adherence to samsaric delusion. They still aren't letting it go. So if that's the condition while I'm here, Shakyamuni, alive, their teacher, needless to say, Nichiren goes on with the quotation from Shakyamuni, more people will do so after my extinction. I mean, look at how intolerant the world is today. Not a very accurate prediction, I would say, right? Question, where is a proper statement to prove that Nichiren is this person? Still, the questioner doesn't quite get it, right? Like Nichiren, who are you to say that this teaching was just for you? It's obviously not what Nichiren is saying, but be that as may, his answer is, it is in chapter 13, encouragement for keeping this sutra, saying, quote, ignorant people will speak ill of us, abuse us, and threaten us with swords and sticks. Well, Nichiren certainly is the example in our generation, in our epoch, our era, of a person who was threatened with his life, almost beheaded, sent to die on some forsaken island. Yeah? So he's saying that's... But understand, Nichiren says this fully aware that his followers, his students, are also being persecuted, threatened, having their lands taken, right? Even killed. So he's not just saying me, Nichiren, but he is the figurehead of this movement. So he's owning it. Okay? Question. Is this not praising yourself? So Nichiren takes a kind of a clever, oh, you're going to ask me that in light of everything that's happening today? Like you don't know? So he answers, I'm overjoyed so much with the scriptural prediction fitting my life that I cannot help praising myself. Now, obviously, we know what he means when he says that. It's not idle puffery. What he's saying is that because of this prediction in Shakyamuni's own hand, 3,000 or 2,200 years ago before Nichiren, that this situation that I find myself in and my followers and everyone who's following the correct teaching is having this reaction contemporarily, right, from our surroundings, we're actualizing Shakyamuni's very prediction. So we must be doing something right, yeah? This is what Nichiren is saying. But the casual observer who doesn't understand all of this would point to him as being this arrogant singular thing. So Nitrin's kind of toying with that a little bit, yeah? Question, for whom was the essential section of the Lotus Sutra expounded? Okay, you think you're the person the theoretical teaching was all about. And Nitrin is saying, I represent them, but it's not me alone, although it sounds that way in this translation. And maybe that's the way he owned it. So now the question is, well, what about the important part? Who's that for? Almost like it. You're going to say that's for you too? Yeah? So Nitrin answers. Two purposes are conceivable in preaching the essential section, a very democratic, an academic answer. Yeah, he's not owning this. He's saying there's two ways of looking at it. First, the reason Shakyamuni Buddha reveals the eternity of his life in passing in the 15th chapter, the appearance of bodhisattvas from under the ground, concise opening the near and revealing the distance, is to enlighten his disciples who have been guided through teachings expounded for 40 years or so before the Lotus Sutra and in the first theoretical section of the Lotus Sutra. That's the 15th chapter, right? Yeah, 15th. And he's preparing, right, the 16th chapter, the ground for the drop the mic moment, I always say, of the lifespan of the Tathagata. Secondly, one chapter and two half chapters from the last part of the appearance of bodhisattvas from under the ground chapter, the 15th, in which Maitreya raised the question, requesting the Buddha to preach for people after his extinction, through chapter 16, the lifespan of the Tathagata, to the first half of the chapter 17, variety of merits, are exactly for clearly expounding the eternity of the Buddha, expanded opening the near and revealing the distant. This is solely for the sake of people after the death of the Buddha. In other words, the essential teaching is the self-realization, the self-teaching, the self-manifesting of Buddha-ness within the samsaric realm. Question. Could you explain what is meant by, quote, revealing the eternity of the life of the Buddha in passing? Answer. None of the great bodhisattvas, such as Manjushri, the king of the Brahma heaven, Indra, sun god, moon god, star god, the dragon king, were Shakyamuni Buddha's disciples while he was preaching the pre-Lotus Sutra after attaining Buddhahood. Okay. Even before the Buddha began preaching upon attaining enlightenment, these bodhisattvas and heavenly beings had already achieved the state of emancipation, and they preached by themselves distinct teachings and perfect teachings. After that, Shakyamuni Buddha expounded the Agama Sutras, Hodo Sutras, and the Wisdom Sutra. However, these were not beneficial for those bodhisattvas and heavenly beings because they already knew both distant and perfect teachings, not to mention Pitaka and common teachings. It is said that the large serves also for the small. In detail, these bodhisattvas and heavenly beings could have been Shakyamuni's masters for his good friends, not disciples. When eight chapters of the theoretical section of proper of the Lotus Sutra were expounded, which they had never before heard, they became his disciples. So this is describing the situation of all teachings prior to Siddhartha Gautama attaining Shakyamuni status, the living embodiment of Buddhahood, right? So all of these previous, the Brahma king and the heavenly gods, these were all previously existing theories. And so these people weren't people. They were embodiments of universal forces that people prayed to or worshiped or hoped to, you know, someday access somehow. But it wasn't until Shakyamuni started teaching and saying, stop looking to the skies, stop looking elsewhere, stop looking outside your own mind, and understand that those states of being are yours. They're in your mind to behold, to experience. That was very, very, very difficult, not only to understand. People still struggle with that today, right? We still have a clown circus of people saying that, like we just had a senator in the United States, Gomer, what a bozo, saying the reason we have school shootings in elementary schools is because we don't pray to God enough. That because we took prayer out of schools, children are being shot. Like, are you really saying God is such a... that he would kill our children for not praying to him? Does Gomer actually hear what he's saying? So what's going on in that human being's mind? That's what happens with the magical thinking. It has no basis in reality that people cling to. It is abhorrent. And it was no different in Shakyamuni's day. But those people, they cling so strongly to their magical thinking that when reason walks in and says, look, isn't it obvious what's happening here? Those people go out of their minds further. They go ballistic, trying to protect their magical thinking. So no wonder Shakyamuni, Siddhartha Gautama, enlightened Siddhartha Gautama as Shakyamuni, the embodiment of Buddhiness. A lot of people were amazed by him, but just as many people wanted to kill him, shut him up. How can you say that? Are you saying you're better than us, right? The jealousy, the just insane stupidity. So if people were trying to kill Shakyamuni Buddha and Nichiren is experiencing the exact same thing 2,200 years later, obviously this human derision, this delusion is just as powerful in his time and in our time. We're living through that same insanity right now, publicly televised, constantly. Just insane disrespect for life. Money more important than life. Guns more important than life. Anything that augments, that's perceived gain, whether it's ego or property or status, completely trumps the value of life. How is that possible? And yet here we are, Buddhists, practicing this total life affirmation in the face of some that would certainly react violently if they actually understood what it is that we are affirming. So that's kind of a cautionary tale, right? It's important that we convert the people around us to right thinking. But sometimes that takes a slow simmer and exposure. We have to let it come to us. And it's a very different proposition to go out and pound people over the head with it, because you can expect a ballistic reaction. So be smart, yeah? Be observational. Back to Nichiren. In detail, or detail, these bodhisattvas and heavenly beings could have been Shakyamuni Buddha's masters or his good friends, not disciples. In other words, these were related, the Brahma gods, all these deities and stuff, could be related to Buddha. But what happens in the eight chapters of the theoretical section of the Lotus Sutra, when something they had never been exposed to, that logic, that non-magical, real truth, they all go from being these huge conceptual gods and things to students of Shakyamuni Buddha. Does that mean they all attended a classroom and learned from Buddha? No, what it means, figuratively, is that within the realization of Buddha-ness, all of these other mental states, no matter how fantastical, are corralled into the lens, the space, the mental space of mental functions. That Buddha-ness contains all potential, remember? The engine of life, the universe, is just expressing and manifesting all potentials. Well, many of those potentials seem fantastical. How could this be? But from the standpoint of reason, clear understanding of the process of life, all of these potentials simply become, oh yeah, imagination. That's part of life. Abstraction. That's part of life. It doesn't control life. It's part of life. It's a mental state. Wow, Buddhism really corrals all of that magical thinking and simply values it for what it really is, just magical thinking. We all have it from time to time. We use it. We make music. We create language. We make paintings, art. We find solutions to problems, all with our power of abstraction, our what if of things. But that doesn't mean that the magic is real. It means that our mental functions are really amazing. That we can conjure and create reality. And that is the central point, that all reality is a conjuring, a creation, this apparatus. And to the credit of this apparatus, it can have a realization of the prime driver of the whole thing. This creative, constantly manifesting entirety of potential as being a real experienced within the mind of the samsaric being, observation. Not something from without, but something from within the mind that can perceive this magnificent engine of life that depends wholly, and I mean wholly, wholly, on this apparatus. This reverence for life is built into this realization that this mind, which seems detached from this reality, is not an alternate reality, but an emergent property of this reality. Do you see the connection? You could say, as an analogy, that human beings, fascinated with their own imagination, perceive that their imagination as something outside their bodily reality. Buddhism says, no. That imagination is the benefit of and the engine of observation of this very reality. It's not a separate thing. That seems pretty plain. It's still hard for people to understand. So let's go on with Nichiren. Men of the two vehicles, such as Shariputra and Maudgalyayana, it's always hard to say, who had been the Buddha's disciples, awakened to their first aspiration for Buddhahood at the time of the Buddha's first sermon at Deer Park. The Buddha, however, expounded only expedient teachings for them for more than 40 years. Now, in the Lotus Sutra, he expounded the true Dharma. And when the eternity of the life of the Buddha was suggested in chapter 15, Appearance of Bodhisattvas from Under the Ground, in the essential section of the Lotus Sutra, great Bodhisattvas, men of the two vehicles, Sravakas and Pratyekabuddhas, the king of the Brahma heaven, Indra, sun god, moon god, four heavenly kings, and the dragon king, who had listened to the Buddha preached ever since the preaching of the Flower Garland Sutra, attained enlightenment, reaching the same rank as the Buddha or the one next to it. Therefore, when we look up to the heaven today, we can see living Buddhas giving benefit to people while retaining their original ranks. So this is what I was just explaining. Let me say it again. When Shakyamuni was teaching self-enlightenment, that the entire engine of life in the universe is an attainable observation, understanding, realization within each of our individual minds. He was also saying in the same breath that all these imaginary, magical thoughts you're having about universal forces and gravity and gods and all these things you've for long years and centuries and millennia attributed to something, forces outside yourselves, somehow controlling your little life, are in fact the forces, the deities, the ideas within your own mind. They are not outside yourselves. They are, in fact, your mind at work. Your mind is your ability to perceive, to witness, to invite, own, and live through. They are you. They are not they. They are you. You are they. It all happens in the mind. Make sense? So, therefore, when we look up to heaven, which is the sky, we can see living Buddhas giving benefit to people while retaining their original ranks. In other words, in our Buddha mind, in our realization of the true picture of the momentums of life instantiated in our particular manifestation of it, we can witness all of those great forces and influences from within. Giving benefit to people while retaining their original ranks. They're just as magnificent, but they're not outside of us. We're not victims of them. We're not directed by them. We're the directors. We're the ones running this engine. From that place, doesn't that give a completely refreshing outlook to what our life is, what it's about? How to conduct a life-affirming existence, yes? That's a tremendous responsibility. Question, for whom was the duration of the life of the Tathagata chapter expounded, revealing the Buddha's enlightenment in the remotest past broadly and in detail? Right? This is this key chapter that Nichiren points to for the ultimate, the crux of the whole teaching, the whole body of teaching. Answer, the duration of the life of the Tathagata chapter together with half a chapter preceding from the Bodhisattvas of the Earth and the following it were expounded specifically for the people living after the Buddha's extinction from beginning to end. From beginning to end. It was expounded especially for those in the latter age of degeneration, such as Nichiren. Now he makes clear his earlier declarations that it was taught for me, Nichiren. Now he's saying, such as Nichiren, for people of our time. Question, such a doctrine has never been heard of. Is it preached in any sutra? Have you not been listening? Nichiren, my humble opinion, just being one amongst many, just us guys and gals here, in my humble opinion, cannot match that of the wise people in the past. Even if I quote a proof from a sutra, nobody would believe me. It is similar to the tragedies of Pian Chu and Wu Tzu-shu of ancient China. Pian Chu of China obtained unpolished jewel stones, so he presented them to King Li and his successor, King Wu, but they did not realize the value of the stones and got angry with Pian Chu. Each king cut off one of Pian Chu's legs, so he lost both legs. Nichiren is simply saying, you haven't been listening. And I'm suffering right now the same fate, having quoted all of this information from the Lotus Sutra that makes it obvious that our minds are our lens of the entirety. We can control our experience of this magnificent process of life. And you're not hearing me, just like these people. I'm giving it to you right now. Not me, humble, humble, humble me. I'm just pointing to truth, and you don't want to hear it. Cut off his legs, unbelievable. Another successor, King Wen, whether that happened or not, we don't know. This is expedient teaching, right? Another successor, King Wen, polished the stones and finally realized that they were jewels. Wu Tzu-shu, a loyal minister of King Holu of Wu, worried about the future of the country and admonished the successor on the throne many times in vain. He polished the jewels. Why are you admonishing him? Shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have done that. Why? Finally, he killed himself. Soon thereafter, it is said his country was ruined. Likewise, nobody will listen to me. This is the situation right now in Japan. Nobody wants to hear it. Right? How many people have called out the dictators and fascists of governments all over the world today, simply asking them to be reasonable, which, come on. Asking a mad person to be reasonable is mad. Right? However, if I may quote passages from the Lotus Sutra as proof, it is stated in the Appearance of Bodhisattvas from Under the Ground chapter that Maitreya Bodhisattva, having wondered what the Buddha stated, said to him, if beginning Bodhisattvas hear these words of yours, after your extinction, they may not believe them and commit the sin of slandering the Dharma unknowingly or knowingly but not accepting. They will damage their own potential for enlightenment and the enlightenment of others, right? It means that had the Buddha not expounded the duration of the life of the Tathagata chapter to reveal his eternity, not his Shakyamuni, but Buddha-ness eternity, ordinary people in the latter age would fall into evil realms, such as hell, by having doubts and slandering the Dharma. In the same chapter, the Buddha says, quote, I am leaving this excellent medicine here. Another way of saying, you've got this. You've had it all along. You simply need to go about expressing it. Self-realization, self-manifestation. Not manifested and becoming a self, but self-manifesting, truly manifesting Buddha-ness. And being a part of the actual flow of manifestations. How exciting. Right? It's one thing to dream about being a concert pianist. It's another thing to invoke it and find yourself on stage with 100,000 people in the audience watching you play a concerto. Whoa! That potential's always been here. All I had to do was do it. That's what Buddha's saying. Although this chapter seems to have been intended to benefit people in the past when the Buddha was alive, it is clear from this statement that the Buddha's true intention is to give benefit to people after his extinction. Don't wait for me to teach you how to play the piano. Don't wait for me to train you, to write the music for you. All of this is your potential. It is yours to manifest. Do it. Benefiting those in the past is intended to show an example of the past for people after his extinction. The Buddha also declares in the Lotus Sutra, quote, for anyone who keeps this sutra in this evil world during the latter age of degeneration, right? And this is where we're exhorted to keep it, embrace it, recite it, invoke it. How do we invoke it? By its title, Myoho Renge Kyo. This is Shakyamuni's direct instruction to you and me. Recite it, copy it, write it down, put it on the internet, share it. In the Variety of Merits chapter, Buddhas joyfully display their immeasurable supernatural powers in praise of those who will keep this sutra after my extinction. You will keep Buddha alive. You will keep Buddha awake in reality. In the Supernatural Powers of the Tathagata chapter, quote, propagate this chapter throughout this Saha world in the latter 500-year period after my extinction, lest it should be lost. If you don't do it, nobody will. In the Previous Life of the Medicine King Bodhisattva chapter, and, quote, this sutra is a panacea for sick people in the Saha world, end quote, in the same chapter. And I've talked about this before, and I've gotten some ballistic reactions about it too. What is being sick in terms of Buddhism? Not understanding reality. Right? I talked about this in the addiction video. And I got, that's okay. The Buddha also states in the Nirvana Sutra, quote, suppose there are seven children. Their parents love them all equally, but care most for a sick child, end quote. They spend most of their time trying to help that child, right? Ichantika and slanderers of the true Dharma are like the first and second children of the seven whom parents care most about. Of many illnesses, slandering the Lotus Sutra is the most serious. Of many medicines, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo is the most wonderful medicine. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Right? Because the most wonderful medicine is worthless if you don't take it. That's the meaning of Namu. I am here and I am taking it. I am invoking this Buddha-ness in myself. What is this Buddha-ness in myself? Oh yeah, Myoho Renge Kyo. This Saha world is 7,000 Yohana by 7,000 Yohana in area, and it includes 80,000 countries. In 2,000 years of the ages of the true Dharma and semblance Dharma, the Lotus Sutra did not spread widely. If it does not spread during the latter age of degeneration, Mapo, Shakyamuni Buddha would be a liar. Validation of the truth of the Lotus Sutra by the Buddha of many treasures would come to nothing. And broad, long tongues of Buddhas in manifestation throughout the universe to praise the preaching of Shakyamuni Buddha would become as fragile as banana leaves. As I've said many times, we are those bodhisattvas from under the ground. That is a statement about future growth, future manifestations of this Buddha-ness energy that is the mind of sentient beings. To fully experience the totality of life, this universe, this engine, and manifest it in our own lives. That's so immense. You could just meditate on that alone to understand the immensity of what your mind is capable of experiencing. How could anything be an obstacle with that kind of supernatural power? That's what's meant by those words. There are no obstacles. In fact, obstacles are the very inventions of samsaric delusion. Stop it. Sometimes, maybe most times, I'm overwhelmed by this teaching. It's so immense to even feel bold enough to have the capacity to contain it in our own minds seems unimaginable. And yet, when we present ourselves to our Kaidan, our Butsudan, an enshrined object of focus to get all of this samsaric sensing and consciousness to focus. Boom, there's that Gohanzen, there's that door, there's that portal, that warp drive, that whatever you need to visualize to open up that immense mind of knowing. Knowing every phenomenon in the universe, how it manifests. The whys just fall away. It's not about why. It's about observing the massive play, the massive glorious life. It's so Buddha. It's very powerful. It's very empowering, right? There is nothing you can't overcome, because overcoming is stepping out of that samsaric obstacle that is invented and contrived in the first place. That's not belittling. That's not saying, gosh, I've been so stupid. That's recognizing that this engine of life comes with this tremendous force of ownership and desire. But that's okay, because that's what was required for us to emerge this mind of understanding. Just like parenting a child, we corral their, we don't want to stifle their imagination, right? But we want to corral their bad habits, because they don't understand yet how those bad habits affect them. We call them bad habits because we know that doesn't lead to joy. That leads to self-crucifixion, self-harming. Look at how much more your life has to offer you. It takes time. We raise children. I don't like that word raise because it sounds like livestock, but mentally, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to shape their perception of the world around them in a life-affirming way. And when we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo to our object of focus, to penetrate back into our mind, our Buddha-ness, we are doing the exact same thing for our reality, to move beyond those things that we're attached to and holding us down. Because once you perceive the totality and the amazing wonder of this process, nothing gets in your way. That's happiness. That's joy. Experience that today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your donations. That's an immensely powerful cause, and we all benefit tremendously from it. So thank you. Thank you again. Subscribe. Stay in touch. Click the notification bells if that helps you create this habit. But please subscribe, download the podcast, use these tools. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I will see you in the next one. Bye for now.